Hi, book besties. We're your host, Kelsey,
And Nikki.
and this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of graphic content and mature sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised.
This week we'll be discussing The Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole, but first let's get into last week's bookish news. So the first thing that I have is, if you've been on Book Talk recently, or you've even just like read the news, then you know that there is a huge book ban that is just going across America. And it's not federal, it is like state specific. So every state can like pick or choose which books that they want to, if they even want to. And there are some states, like ours, for example, that are like just banning books by like the hundreds. And it's getting a little out of hand. And basically, like, what we're gathering, and it's not just like our opinions, but authors themselves are coming out and saying, like, it used to be about keeping, as we talked about before on the podcast, like mature scenes and mature content, you know, out of the hands of kids who are not ready for that.
Right. Keeping, and specifically relating to like public schools, you know, keeping sexually explicit content or not necessarily age appropriate content from public schools, which we do understand. We certainly do not agree with any kind of book banning, but we also don't believe that a middle school library should have copies of Icebreaker available.
Yeah.
That's just not an age appropriate thing for a middle schooler to read unless it's discussed between said middle schooler and their parents.
Yeah. And so this is going further, and it's not even just schools, but it's just public libraries themselves. And it's no longer just about mature or sexual content. There are books that are on that list where the only thing that it has in it is talks of a like anti-government, anti-establishment.
Well, quite frankly, Kelsey, that's not surprising.
Yeah. So, Victoria Avanyard, who is mostly a YA author, she's actually writing some adult books, but her page on her TikTok, she goes in links about this because Red Queen, her series, is on the list of books to be banned. And somebody was trying to argue with her about, oh, it's about keeping like sexual content out of books for children. And she's like, well, if you've ever read my books, she's like, then you know that I don't put that in there. Like, there's nothing in there. Like, there's no spicy scenes. It's no jalapenos. But that series is about like anti-establishment, you know, anti-government.
Right. God forbid we empower anyone to think for themselves and or question the establishment.
Right. And so the biggest genre that is coming under fire is fantasy, because a lot of books in fantasy science fiction, you know, is about that. Like,
right, the dystopian, you know, subgenre.
Yeah, I mean, how many
speculative fiction.
Yeah, I mean, how many books have we reviewed, you know, just recently that is, you know, talk about a resistance and anti-government and things like that? It's a very popular theme in fantasy. And so that genre is being targeted hard because it's trendy. If people are starting to read it more, and especially like, I could see when they were starting with the romantasy. I could understand that. But now they're just specifically.
I don't agree with removing any subject material from public libraries.
No.
That, in my opinion, is absolutely ridiculous. That is how people who don't have the means to purchase new books or purchase from Amazon or purchase from Barnes and Noble or even indie bookstores, which we hope you're getting your books from indie bookstores. That's how people have access to their information, guys. And that's how we restrict ideas and restrict access for people who don't have any other choice.
Well, it's quite literally what some of these books, like how that society begins.
That, frankly, if you're not aware, one of the most frequently and widely banned books in the United States is 1984. And then also in the top is Fahrenheit 451, guys. So
Which was crazy because I remember in high school we had to read those books as assignments. And now you can't get access to them.
Well, quite frankly, I think we probably don't have to read them now because we're living it.
Yeah. So.
Just kidding. Please read them.
So Victoria has spent like many TikToks at this point going through it in depth. I think it's really great if you are interested in learning about this from an author's perspective to go to her TikTok and kind of watch the videos.
She's also really well-spoken, intelligent, and also funny. Yeah. I like her content in general.
Yeah, and so she does a really good job about just keeping it about the ban and the bill and the laws itself. And she doesn't, you know, get into a lot of the kind of political turmoil that is going on right now in a lot of book talk, which we thought about talking about, but we just kind of decided not to because it's just, you know, if you want to know about it, you can easily find it and you can kind of do the research yourself. But the banned book is something that is really important to both of us. And so we definitely wanted to make sure that we touched on that topic.
And we, by no means, or at least myself, I won't speak for Kelsey, are in no way apathetic to the current state and country and the political turmoil, but we felt it best to just get you our bookish content. If you want to know my opinions at length, feel free to send me a message and I'll tell you all about them.
Yeah.
But we will spare you that for this episode.
Yeah, and especially because we do have international listeners as well who may or may not read up or know kind of what's going on in America right now. And
we figure you may not be here for our political views. You may be here for our review of Spark of the Everflame.
Yeah. So yeah, so I encourage everybody to kind of read up on the book ban, see where your state and even more specific your county kind of lies and see if, you know, if there's anything that you feel strongly about getting involved. You can most likely find some programs or some groups in your area.
Go to the American Library Association website. There's links there. And there's many resources all over.
Yeah.
All over the internet.
Or you can check out Shelf Indulgence because we promote banned books.
Sure do.
All right, moving on. So in some lighter news, there's yet again another teaser for Onyx Storm. I did not read it.
I read it. I read this one. I looked at it. I read it. And I was like, I will not say anything about it other than it was happy with what I read.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm still too far out to torture myself. And so I have been shying away from looking at all of it because then I'm just going to go down like this depressing rabbit hole where I don't have access to the book and I want to read it right now. So I've been staying away from it, but it is there. Again, it's all over the place. So I'm sure if you haven't seen it, you can find it by just a quick search. Okay, so moving on. So Goodreads has announced their nominees for their books of the year. So every genre gets like, you know, list of nominees. And then right now is the time for you to go and vote. So that's why I'm very vague where I say books of the year, because they have one for, you know, young adult, science fiction, fantasy.
Does romantasy have its own category now?
Yes.
Cool. I wonder what books, you know.
So I know a couple. So Raven Kennedy posted her book was nominated.
Oh, good for her.
Gear the Flames was nominated. Of course, Sarah J. Maas had hers.
Oh, she's not.
Yeah.
It's almost unfair when you think about it. There's just so many Sarah lovers.
Yeah. Fate Inked in Blood was nominated.
I liked that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of newer authors that are coming out that are getting nominated, and I think that that's fantastic. Yes, it's kind of depressing. They're going up against Sarah, who usually always wins anytime she's in a category. But her book was released at the beginning of the year, and it was Crescent City. And as we know, Crescent City isn't the fan favorite series. So because it was so far, like in the beginning of the year, some of these newer ones that are like super, super trending, I think fucking Quicksilver was nominated.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
Anyways. So
was Iron Flame this year or was that last year?
No, that was this year. So that was also nominated.
Okay.
And so maybe some other titles that are going to be fresh in everybody's mind.
Are you sure it was this year? When did you have your baby?
No, it wasn't this year.
You had your baby last year.
I had my baby
Because the
last year.
release was like while you were in the hospital.
Yes, because
Okay,
okay,
so
I
Rebecca
was
Yarros is not
yeah,
out
no.
for it
So
this
she's
year.
not it. No, because I was thinking, I was like, but we went to the thing, and then I remembered we went to the Crescent City release. We didn't go to the, I didn't get to go to the Iron Flame one. But I'll be going to the Onyx Storm one if they have one. Okay, but yeah, so all of the nominees are up. So make sure to check it out. Go vote for your favorite books. Go vote for your favorite authors. This is solely decided on readers. So go check it out. On to some news that mostly I'm excited about. So Harry Potter, has a chokehold on most millennials. But they have fanfic that is written a lot about Harry Potter, most notably about Draco Malfoy and Hermione. And it's called Dramione. And okay, I'm not a big like fanfic person. Like I know that there's a ton of fanfic about like One Direction, like the After series by Anna Todd, that was technically fanfic for One Direction.
50 Shades of Grey was technically started out as fanfic for Twilight.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of fanfic going on right now about like Taylor Swift's Kelsey. But
And the Kylo Ren. There's a whole bunch of stuff that started out as like Kylo Ren fanfic.
like I feel like the OG that everybody knows about is like the Harry Potter fanfic, and especially with Draco and Hermione. So there are three fanfics that are super popular, and they've actually been picked up for adaptations because, as you know, fanfic, like you can't sell it. Like it's illegal to sell it.
Right, because you're using, the someone else's characters.
And so when it gets picked up, like After did, you have to change the names and things like that. So that's why Harry went to Harden and stuff like that. So there's three huge Dramione fanfics that are being made into adaptations. So the first one is Julie Soto. So it was originally called The Auction. And it's now, its adaptation, its name is Rose in Chains. And it's coming out in July of 2025. The second one was originally called Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal of Falling in Love, which was by Brigitte, I think is how you say her name, Knightley. And it's called Irresistible Urge to Fall for Your Enemy. And that also comes out in July of 2025. And the one that I am most excited about, Manacled. So by Shen Zhen Liu is getting an adaptation. It's going to be called Alchemized. There's no release date as of yet. So she released a teaser that said maybe fall of 2025, but she's already 306 words over Manacled. Now, Manacled
Manacle is huge.
is huge. It is huge. The chokehold that that book has on me is just ridiculous. And I started reading it on a whim. And I'm telling you, I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it and pull my phone out and start reading it. Like it just like So Manacled, it's different than most of the other
It's
fanfics.
kind of like a Handmaid's Tale situation, right? Very dark.
So it's basically if Voldemort won instead of Harry. And so like in the book, Harry's not alive and the world is ran by Voldemort. And yeah, so then there's like a Handmaid's Tale put into the book situation, and it's just so good.
Yeah, I've never read it. I think, unfortunately, I think it's not for me. And I think right now, especially, I think it's just too much.
So I am very excited that it's getting an adaptation. I will 1000% be reading it when it comes out. I have the things that I would do to get a copy of Manacles, but I won't buy it. So I know I've seen it and I have reported them on Etsy. There are people that are selling it and they're selling it for like hundreds of dollars. And I keep reporting the pages because it's illegal for them to be doing that.
Now, the only way that it is okay to purchase fan fiction is if there's no profit. Like, you can pay someone to print and bind it, but you have to prove that you're only paying for the cost of the materials. They can't charge you for labor, they can't charge you for anything else. So you technically, and I think you have to have the original posters
Yeah, you have to have the
permission.
author's
Because I know
permission.
that Phoebe has contacted, authors on AO3 and, asked if it would be okay. And then I think etiquette sometimes is that if you are going to bind a fanfic, that you do two copies and send one to the original
Author.
author.
So even though this isn't going to be manacled, I am still excited to get to read it and get to own a copy. Her writing is fantastic.
I think I will check it out when it's posted, when things are a little less raw,
And I mean, it's terrible that this comes from that person. Like, the Harry Potter world comes from that person, but her writing, not JK, but the manacled author, is she's just anything else. I know, because you don't want to read it, but I'm gonna see if she's written anything else and send it to you, because you just have to like experience her writing.
I think I will. I think I will read it when it comes out. But I think right now it just all feels so very current events that, that I'm wait.
Okay, so that's all that I have for bookish news. Let's jump into the spoiler-free part of our review.
Okay, so at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating for Spark of the Everflame is 4.21 stars with 88,000 ratings. This book was released in June of 2023. It was indie self-published, but has since been trad published by Atria Books last month, October of 2024. So they picked it up and then now they're re-releasing them. I'm assuming you can't get the indie versions anymore.
Not for, unless you're gonna
Oh yeah,
spend
you looked into it and saw a
hundreds.
paperback for hundreds of dollars on Amazon or something like that.
Book two, you can get it for $250.
So this is the first in the Kindred's Curse series. There are four books in total, but the fourth one has something weird going on with it. It was released, it was pulled. Now there's no release date set for it. I don't know. It's something strange is happening.
So the whole series in itself, it's kind of strange. So it's technically finished. So she released all four books. Like, you can go on Goodreads and you can read the reviews for the fourth book, but you can't find it anywhere. Like, you can't find it on like Goodreads, you can't find it on Amazon. Like, you can't even find it on her, like, you can find it on her website, but nothing about when it's going to be released, where you're going to be able to buy it from, what versions are going to be available, nothing.
I wonder if she edited content, for
I
the
think
trad
so.
publish. So maybe it's just in a revisionary period. Plus, I mean, if you're trad publishing, you don't want a quick release every other month one of these books. You want to spread it out
No,
for
but it's
interest.
so crazy though, because so the first book, was trad published and released in October. The second book, it's not available until December 3rd, but the third book, you can buy it right now. It's so strange. And then the fourth book, there's like nothing. The four so they were all supposed to be released by the end of this year, and the fourth book had a release date, and then there were even pre-orders for it, and then they canceled it and they refunded everybody for their pre-orders, and they were like, yeah, it's not being released yet. And then that's all they've said about it. Like, they're not giving anything else. So assume sometime next year. But yeah, as I don't know.
I
So
don't know either. I
it
couldn't
was
tell
so
you.
hard for me to just find a description of the fourth book. I couldn't find it anywhere.
I don't think there are any special editions of this yet, but I would not be surprised if we get a whole bunch of
Oh yeah,
editions.
for sure.
Because people really
It's
are crazy about this. People are nuts about this
yeah,
series.
I mean, it's gaining a lot of fan and a lot of attention. So
And it's
yeah.
weird. I first read this book like maybe almost a I mean, at least 6 months ago,
Yeah. Yeah.
and now all of a sudden it's like everywhere.
People love it.
Yeah, so you can get it right now. It's free on KU. There is an audio version that you can get, as Kelsey said, the first one in physical form. Don't forget to use bookshop.org, which supports your local indie bookstores, to get your physical copy.
Yeah, so now let's get into the description of the book. And we want to preface this by saying we tried so hard to find pronunciations of some of the characters, and we couldn't. So
neither of us did the audio version for this, so please do not chastise us.
Yeah, so we're just going to go based off what we assume, and we may be right, we may be wrong. So just a disclaimer there. When the old secrets catch fire, everything will burn. In the mortal world colonized by the gods and ruled over by the descended, their cruel offspring, Diadem Bellator yearns to escape the insular life of her poor village. Her mother's sudden disappearance and the discovery of a dangerous secret about her past offers Diadem an unexpected opportunity to enter the dark world of the descended royalty and unlock the web of mysteries her mother left behind. With the dying king's handsome, mysterious heir watching her every move, and a ruthless mortal alliance recruiting her to join the growing civil war, Diadem will have to navigate the unwritten rules of love, power, and politics in order to save her family and all of mortal kind.
So I'm going to be the person to give you crap about mispronouncing Diadem. Diadem is a crown.
We talked about this. And
we talked about this at length.
We did. And I don't know why in my brain, I was like...
You did it the first time and I was like, I'm going to let it go.
Dude, and I knew it too. And I was like, that's not right. And I just kept going.
Diadem. I don't know. We're going with Diadem. I think it's Diem.
We went back and forth on it so many times. And then I just like threw in a completely wrong word.
Anyway... The genre of this book, this is a new adult, romanticy, fantasy. It's got a little touch of dystopian in there.
Yeah, which all. I will say, this is the first book that we have done for the pod recently that I've seen that uses the genre new adult.
True.
And I love it because it's exactly what it is.
It is. It is. It is correct. Although Goodreads also said that the genre is dragons.
And magic. Which is to see magic in it. And dragons, I assume...
But I'm pretty sure dragons is not a genre.
No, but I mean, I'm assuming somewhere down the line there are dragons in the series.
I just thought it was funny. Genre, yeah. Dragons.
Yeah. Okay, for trigger warnings, we have death, thoughts of suicide, degradation of a certain population, and fantasy racism.
So I guess we're going to jump right into our jalapeno ratings, right?
Yep, our spice rating.
Spice rating. Kelsey, after you.
I gave it a 0.5. There's a sex scene. However, it's non-descriptive. I mean, you know that they're doing it, but she's not going into detail in regards to the actual sex itself, just that it's occurring. And then there's one kissing scene, which she actually does go into a little bit of detail. And there's like, you know, some rubbing or whatever, but that's really it. So given its genre, it's pretty low on the spice.
Pretty tame on the spice, which I was surprised. I was expecting more spice, but I gave it a 0.5 to a 1. Yes, the one sex scene, the kiss between her and the kiss that was described was definitely, definitely epic. But also for her kind of general horniness, like she can't stop looking at his mouth and like he's, you know, grazing his hands up her calf and whatnot. I don't know. So I thought it got a little honorary half pino.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that. Also, not that this is like part of spice, but it just like kicked into my brain more so for the trigger warning. There is a couple of scenes where there is non-consensual touching that does occur. So
that true. And there is violence.
Yeah.
And death. I mean, did we mention that?
Yeah, we mentioned death.
Violence,
yeah.
And death.
Yeah. Okay, so Sweet Pino, I give it a 1. This book is really more about building that attraction. There's also, and we'll talk about it too in the trope, but there's a little bit of a love triangle. So there is the romance, but not really, between like her and Henry, and then there's like this building attraction with Luther. The one thing I will say is Luther, when he helps her after there's a fire and he helps her afterwards, was super sweet, and that's kind of where my one comes from. Other than that, there really isn't too much. I mean, Henry isn't like the super romantic type, or at least not portrayed in this book.
So, as Kelsey mentioned, we've got our little love triangle. We've got Luther and Henry. I gave this book actually three pinos, all for Luther. While his feelings weren't like overly stated, it was very subtle. Like they were certainly there, and certainly there from the beginning. Like you said, there's a fire. He leaves his command. He's in charge. He is, basically our brooding captain of the guard. He's like, whatever, this building is burning down. He's like, hey, so and so, you take over, and I'm gonna carry you, this female mortal woman, to safety. The thing that I liked about him, and I'm putting it in the sweet peppers, is that he is just like proud of her and impressed by her. He compliments her like for her healing skills, and he's just like generally supportive of like the person that she is. I don't know, which we did not get from the other love interest.
No.
The other love interest fell really flat to me and felt like all he wanted to do was like change her or lead her like on a different path, and I felt like Luther was not doing that. I felt like
Yeah.
he was genuinely there for who she was as a person, and I think that that deserves some extra sweet peppers.
True. I definitely think I would have given this more of a higher rating if we had maybe a dual point of view, but everything is on her side.
And we really have to like read between the lines,
Yeah,
his
to see it.
glances or his jaw tightening or whatever.
Yeah.
There was a line though. She's got a knife to his throat and he goes, I can't fathom a more beautiful end. Let me die with the taste of you on my lips. He's like, if you're gonna kill me, fucking kiss me first. And I was like,
Dude, the
oh, he's getting you.
sometimes I've thought about that one particular line in the book all week. I don't know why. Because, I mean, it's pretty standard in a lot of the.
I was like, sure.
Dude, I mean, I did too, but I don't know why. It's stuck in my head. I've been thinking about it for all week. I don't know.
And then there's this other point, and it's really early on, and he's like, it's safe to say, Miss Bellator, you've won me over. And all I could think of, like, Mr. Darcy, is like, you've won me body, mind, and soul. And that's what it was. I don't know.
Okay, moving on to our smell report.
Smell report. So we only have one smell alone, Luther. He smells like cedar and leather and woodsy musk.
Of course it does. He even comments that he smells like being deep in the forest or something like that. And I was like, of fucking course he does.
I would buy that candle. Cedar and leather and woodsy musk.
I'm sure it's at every single bookstore, but with a different person's name on it
Yeah.
because they all smell like that. I can't. You guys know my opinion on the freaking woodsy scent for
At least the
male
quote
characters.
specifically mentions that it's pine.
That's true.
Because that bothers me.
Yeah.
The constant pine smell bothers
Yeah, or evergreen. Yeah.
me. Which I'm assuming is the same thing. I don't live by a lot of, I mean, we don't really have those kind of trees to smell here.
No.
But
We have palm trees.
we have palm trees, which I don't think have a smell.
No, they don't.
No. I'm gonna go smell a palm tree tomorrow.
There's one in my yard.
I mean, there's one outside the bookshop.
Oh, that's true. I'm looking at Okay, moving on to tropes. So we have touch her and die, enemies to lovers, forbidden love for multiple characters, a love triangle. He falls first twice for Henry and for Luther. And then somewhat of a childhood love, which again is Henry. They've known each other their entire lives, and then they're just like, oh, let's just take this a step further. So it's kind of there more. And then a little bit, I would say, of unrequited.
Little bit, and we also have establishment and anti-establishment.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna amend your touch her and die because we have a direct quote. It's touch her and I'll rip off your fucking arms.
Yeah. And maim.
Touch her and maim. Yes.
Okay, so let's get into plot, characterization, and world building. But I got something to say.
Yep. You go first for
Okay,
DM.
so for you, I will go first for
Oh.
DM. But The map, 12 out of 10. Some claps, claps. It was a good map. It was a circle. It was not in the middle. I mean, I read it on Kindle, but so as far as I know, it's not in the middle. I haven't cracked open a physical book, so that might ruin it for me. But it was a good map. It was a circle. You could read everything. It wasn't very like detailed,
Oh,
but
not at all, but
yeah, it was a good map. So you got some points for that. All right. Character. So I fucking hated her. I'm sorry. I hated her. So she's a whining, poor me. She's absolute like kind of a ditz. And then the bratty behavior. I have a thing about the bratty like behavior in books. There's only a couple of genres I feel where it makes sense. You're talking about like BDSM, erotica, dark romance books. That's a kink, and that's a thing, and I get that. It makes sense in those instances, but in any other genre, I fucking hate it. Like when we read Wild Love, and she was like
Oh,
pretty,
yeah.
hated it. In this book, absolutely hated it. That's not a thing, I feel like, in fantasy. And so adding it in there was just so annoying to me. And I mean, I get it. She's like, I think she's 20 or 22, whatever. It just annoyed the shit out of me. I could not stand her character. I really couldn't. And it was just like, without going into too much, she like has like the rebel cause or whatever, and they want her to join and go up against the Descendant. And she's like, yeah, sure, like I'll join or whatever. And then they send her on a mission. She does this mission, provides them with this information, and then she's like flabbergasted that they acted on it and that people got hurt. I'm like, what did you think was going to happen?
So her character, basically, while she is technically an adult, she has been very sheltered her whole life. She is certainly very naive. She has also been gaslighted and manipulated her whole life by her family. So I think it stands to reason that she really has no idea that her actions have the consequences and the severity of her consequences,
I don't
because
know.
she really has been sheltered.
But she's a healer, so she knows exactly what goes on.
Oh, true. And she does go to, like,
Paradise
that's one
Row,
is,
yeah. So she knows exactly what happens because when she.
But she has been kept away specifically from the Descendants. She knows, like, nothing about them,
That's
really.
fine. I get that. I wasn't mad that she was ignorant and naive on like their customs and how everything works there. That made sense. But it was just like. Anyway, the thing with the rebels got me. I'm like, what do you think was gonna happen?
Yeah. No, I didn't love her either. I just thought that I'm drunk. She's also described kind of as ugly, which I thought was different. She's described as being gangly, and she's like kind of thankful for the fact that she's gangly and thin and not. She's
She's
not
not.
described as beautiful.
She's not described as ugly because, in mortal sense, like she's like they talk about her and like say it to her face like that she's beautiful.
They do?
Yeah, like when they go to what is it, Fortos or whatever, and meets what is his name, Burke? I don't know, one of the other.
All things that you guys have no idea what we're talking about because we haven't really played that game.
And he comments on like how pretty she is. What you're referring to is she compares herself to the Descendant, and they're like ethereal, and they're like,
Right, okay.
and it's very much like fae almost, in their beauty, and they're like athletically built and stuff like that. So she's comparing herself to that, where she doesn't stick out like a true descended would,
Right.
because
And the
she.
reason that is because she had a childhood illness, right? And so
Yeah.
I guess we should talk about, I feel bad. I feel like we're kind of all over the place. And I hope you guys are following along
You
well
have to
enough with
like
us.
this book is like very specific in its details on how the worlds are described and built and like the characters.
Right. And we don't really want to ruin anything, but I think that it's important to add that the descended, like Kelsey said, they're similar to Fae, but they have light hair and light eyes, and deemed as two, because she had a childhood illness, which kind of like leached the color out of her hair and her eyes. And I guess that's why she's being comparing herself to the descendants.
Yeah, so mortals all have brown eyes, and the descended all have different colored eyes depending on where they're descended from. So like in Lumos, which is where they're at, they all have blue eyes. And I think they can all have different colored hair. But yeah, so she has like white hair and like gray eyes. And so when people first see her, they're like, "Are you a descendant?" And she's like, "No, I just had a childhood illness." Like she was born with brown hair and brown eyes, like all mortals. So that's where she talks about like, "Yeah, you can clearly tell that because I'm not like as pretty as they are."
Okay.
Basically. So yeah, so speaking of descended, yeah, they're similar to Fae, but they're not Fae in this book. I view it as more as like they're almost like a demigod, which I think is technically what they are because
They're descended from
descended
the
from,
gods.
yeah, descended from the gods and mortals. They have powers depending on which city they're at. So Lumos is the city of light and shadow. They also have long lifespans. They heal quickly and they're like super strong. And then you have the mortals who
See, I
are.
almost got like vampire vibes. Like I know because
They can go
of
in the
how
sunlight.
I know, but like the fact that they're like so, because I picture them, especially the Lumos ones with the light eyes and the light hair and like just like kind of like I don't know, light skinned, like almost white. I don't know. I just pictured them kind of more like vampires because they heal really fast and they're super strong and.
Think they all have, because Luther has black hair.
All right, well, fuck my opinions.
Oh, they're just.
That's what it was giving me.
Yeah.
That was my initial vibe. I
Yeah.
felt that they were giving vampire in appearance to me more than Fae.
Yeah, no, see, I had it the other way. I had that they were very similar to Fae. But yeah, then we have the mortals who are just like basic humans. And then they are looked down upon by the descended as being lesser than because they don't have power and they live like shorter lifespans and yeah, so. And then they have technically half breeds are a thing, but in Lumos specifically, they're subject to death, so they're not supposed to be born.
There are progeny laws, though, so basically, forced death of those children.
Okay, so other characters we have. So we have Luther. He's a descendant. He's actually the prince. For I don't even know like how. I guess just because like his uncle was the king, I don't know. So he's royalty, so he's a prince. I wrote that he's just a typical shadow daddy.
Yeah.
Even though I think I don't know if he has shadow powers. I know he has the light powers. So typically I think they have one or the other is I think how I read that. But yeah, he's just typical like shadow daddy. He's a brooding male and he just sits in a corner and he always scowls at everybody and everyone's afraid of him, but he will like he gives will burn down everything for her vibes.
I agree completely. I have nothing to add to that. Let's talk about Henry. All right, Henry is my least favorite character. I fucking hate Henry. But Kelsey put Henry, wet paper bag. That's Kelsey's description of Henry. For me, he reminded me almost of Gale in The Hunger Games because he's so angry and so militant.
I never read The Hunger
Oh
Games.
yeah, I was like, why are you just fucking staring at me, Kelsey? So in The Hunger Games, we also have a love triangle, and we have Gale, who just he's angry, he has a lot of feelings, he's really for the cause, he's just like motivated by the cause, and that is his like singular focus, and he wants everything to be about that, and he's like, do whatever it takes for the cause kind of a thing. And
So
that's what
like
Henry.
pale, kinda, and like Throne of Glass.
Yeah, I don't hate Kale as much as everyone else does.
Yeah, I mean, he further in the series he gets better, but
Well, I don't think Kale is to the extreme.
okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he is either, but I don't know who Gale is, so.
Yeah, I just fucking hated him. He, quote unquote, loves Diem, loves her so much that he wants her to quit being a healer and pop out all his babies and stay at home.
Yeah.
And marry him.
Which she...
Fucking anti-feminist piece of shit.
Yeah, which was, like, her biggest fear, and she did not want to do that, and...
Right, that was something she prided herself on, was that she could go anywhere, she could take care of herself, she had a career, and then Henry's like, well, fuck all that. He's like, pop out some kids, let's get married.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Fight the cause.
Which I think is funny, because he proposes to her, and she's like... like, runs away. Yeah, I could not stand his... It was, like, it was touch and go. Anytime there was a scene between the two of them, I just wanted to skip it, because I didn't like her, and I really hated him. And just having to read the dialogue between them, I was like, it's very forced and almost kind of cringy in some parts. And I hated it.
I do think that she kind of portrayed their relationship really well, because imagine you're in a relationship with someone that you've been in a relationship. I mean, they've known each other their whole lives, you know, and you've been so close to someone and you've spent so much time with them. And I think she did a good job of this, like, reluctance on Diem's part to, like, let him go or to move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she almost wouldn't allow herself, you know, to think about a possibility of not him, because this is what she was used to.
And
I
safe.
Think that she, and it's safe, yeah. And I think that she did a really good job of that internal struggle.
Yeah.
For Diem.
Yeah. I and we'll save some of it for the spoiler part, but I definitely agree. There's a war going on in her mind on who she wants to be with versus who she...
And who she wants to be in general.
Yeah, and who she, like, quote-unquote, should be with. And yeah, I mean, I get that the author does these contrasts on purpose, and I understand that. So it's just like, and it's exactly how, like, the sex scene with Henry is non-descriptive, but the one kiss scene with Luther is so descriptive.
Right, the author is clearly leading you on a path here.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're supposed to hate Henry. I don't know, but yeah, he was. If that's the case, she did a really good job at it, because I fucking hated him.
I fucking hated him too. Sure did.
A couple things also with the world building. So there's not a ton of it that they go into. I mean, they spend like a little bit of the first chapter going over how the world works. And I think there's even a like kind of like a glossary at the beginning that kind of breaks it down.
The powers of each realm.
Yeah.
Each realm, you know, as Kelsey mentioned, descended from each god, they have their own realms, and they have the magic that goes along with those realms.
Yeah. I really loved the description of Lumos City and the color contrast between the descended and the mortal cities, and the descended and the mortals themselves. So as we said, the descended, they're like have an ethereal beauty, they have blue eyes, and then the mortals have like brown hair, brown eyes. And that's very
And from
much...
the way they dress, too. Like, the mortal women, for example, cover everything up. Think of, like, Victorian, you know, like, collars and no skin tone.
And they all wear brown.
Right.
Like, different colors of brown.
And the descended, not so much. It's all, you know, bright colors and different fabrics and show off whatever you want. And
yeah, and the city is, you know, in the mortal realm, it's pretty standard, like, kind of slum city and... You know, lots of just like dirt roads and mud, and it's just dirty, and that's why they wear brown. And then you go into the descended city, and it's like marble and grass and all sorts of different colors. And yeah, everybody's wearing vibrant colors, and the houses are like so extravagant. And I liked that. I liked that she had that description in there, and you could really see the contrast between the two cities. Even though it's one realm, they're
right,
you know, two different cities.
My favorite part of the world building, I really loved the Gryvern, which is the Griffin Wyvern, and I just liked that he had his own like sassy little personality, and you know, just reminded me of like a big angry
cat. Yeah, I liked him. Yeah, so magical. Okay, let's move into our ratings. I gave it a 3. I thought the plot and the storyline were great. My biggest issue was with the FMC. I think I would have enjoyed this book way more had it been literally anybody else. So yeah, I got into it, but at the same time, I was like, I just can't stand her.
So I also gave it a 3 stars, a solid 3 stars, maybe even a little more. I would have liked a little more spice, but I thought, I mean, it was solid. It was a solid plot. We actually, I don't even think it really touched that much on the plot so much as far as like the rebellion and the resistance.
Yeah, I mean,
There is one, we'll just say that. We'll just say that there is unrest, between the descendant and the mortals, and the mortals are like, hey, this is unfair. And so there's a resistance, of course. And that is basically, I mean, I think the major plot, other than, Diem growing as a character, I guess, and kind of becoming less naive about the world and learning all these things about the descendant and what have you.
I
Well,
thought she had no character growth.
she at least has knowledge growth. She knows nothing about the descendant, and then she's like thrown into this world as the healer. And then thrown into this whole idea of like a rebellion, and she's finding out all these things she didn't know before.
I guess, but yeah, I didn't want to go into the plot too much because a lot of it has spoilers. So, I mean, we will in the spoiler part of the review,
But we don't
but
want to ruin anything for you.
yeah, just know that there's a civil war brewing between the descendant and the mortals, and she's going to be like smack dab in the middle of it because she has basically a foot in each world.
So yeah, solid 3 stars. I could have had a little more pointiness. Yeah.
The low spice kind of also was sucked for me, but I mean I get it. Like, or because how many times do we dislike books because they rush it? You know, where they meet, they all of a sudden fall in love with each other, and they like
Right, that whole
hook up.
Cthulhu thing. Like, there definitely is, a slow burn here.
For sure. Okay, so Nikki, would you say it's for your shelf?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm
I
kind of.
can't really answer that. Like, I don't have an answer. If a really pretty hardcover comes out, like regular price hardcover comes out, like I could be persuaded. If it had like nice frayed edges or something, like, I could be persuaded to own the first, I think.
I think I will eventually own it. It wasn't like, oh my God, I have to go and get it right now, like add to cart immediately. I think if a copy came in a shelf, I'd buy it.
Fair.
But,
I think she's an Nepali author.
oh, is
I
she?
believe so. Yeah.
I'll have to look. I'll have to double
Yeah.
check.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, in that
Don't
case,
quote me on it because now I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know.
if she is,
Shit. I don't know. Don't listen to me.
okay. But if she is, in that
Second-guessing
case,
myself.
then I will be buying a book. Okay, so that is it for our spoiler-free part of our review of Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole. Join us next week as we discuss Ice Planet Barbarians by Ruby Dixon. As always, be sure to leave us some stars and a comment on anything you would like us to cover. We are now going to jump into the spoiler part of our review. So if you want to read this book and you don't want anything spoiled, you're going to jump off now. If you've already read it or you like to have things spoiled for you, then keep listening.
That's right. If you're still with us, welcome backstage.
Okay, so
I have a lot of questions.
yeah, so the beginning of this book starts off with obviously you meet her and then her mother like disappears. And then it like flashes forward to 6 months later and her mom is still gone. And you're like, what happened to the mom, right? And everybody, like, you assume, like, oh, mom died. Like, mom is dead. And then you start finding out kind of secrets about the mom. Like, she was the palace healer. And, like, she had a life debt to serve the crown in
And she met
capacity.
Luther in a dark alley. I mean, that's the first scene in the book, right? That's the prologue.
No, the prologue is basically she said, is alluding to a war, and she says if maybe she had done something when she witnessed that meeting, a bunch of people wouldn't have died.
Okay.
And so in the first chapter, she sees him, and then she sees like that crazy lady.
Yeah, which that was so strange. That was kind of out of nowhere. So there's a woman that's just like, basically, like a weird prophecy lady, and she's just like spouting off, I don't know,
And
just.
she tells her to stop taking flame root. So DM takes flame root, that's quote unquote to help her child, childhood illness, and the crazy lady tells her to stop taking it, so she stops taking it. And she starts noticing all of these changes because when she wasn't taking it when she was younger, she was like hallucinating and seeing visions and all sorts of stuff. And so that's why they told her she had to take it. And so now that she doesn't have it and she like got rid of her whole like stockpile or whatever, she's like hearing a voice in her head and she's like getting these visions and like she's like super angry all the time.
Her magic is gone.
But anyway, so with the mom, we actually get a little in the epilogue, we get a teaser. So the mom is alive. And like, I don't know where she is. She's somewhere else. But she's there basically, I think, waiting out until the king dies. And then at the end, she's like, in 30 days, I get to go home. So she's there for a very specific reason. I don't know why. But she, yeah, is like in cahoots with Prince Luther. On something.
Right. I think, quite frankly, I'm wondering if she's not the leader of the rebellion. Because they say the leader of the rebellion is a really strong woman. And she's like out doing some kind of mission, something that has to
Yeah.
do with the king. Like she is there specifically knowing that the king is going to die. She was the palace healer. They say multiple times that he doesn't look like he should be dying, that he just looks
An old
like an
man.
old man. So maybe she's like poisoned him or something, and now he's
Ooh.
disappearing for months so that she can't be blamed on it. Like, I don't know. This is what I think. Because when you think about Henry, it's like, he has disparaging things to say about her father, but he has no disparaging things to say about the mother.
And he says that she knows some of the guardians. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I
I
think
can.
so. That's my prediction, is
I
that she is perhaps the leader of this.
okay. Okay, I can get down with that.
Because she knows a lot of shit. I mean, she knows that her daughter, I mean, I don't think they say it, but obviously Diem is probably like a half
She's half
descendant.
right. Yeah, she's half
Because
descended.
she's got the magic and she's got the eyes and
Well, because Luther even alludes to it when they kiss or whatever, and he's like, if you're worried about the progeny laws, like he knows what she
yeah, because
is.
he can feel her magic.
Yeah. And so
And she has like magic.
he's a comedian. Because he even said, like, when she was like, I'm just mortal, and he's like, is disappointed. And he's like, if that, he says it like twice when he was like, you really believe that, don't you? And then when they like kiss or whatever, and she's like running away from him, he's like, disappointed. I think the author even makes it a point to say, like, he looks disappointed when he was like, if that's what you wish, because she doesn't want to own the fact that she's. If not full descended, which I don't think she is because that's her birth mother, then
Right. I
she's
mean, or is it? We
half.
don't know.
It's true.
We don't know.
That's true. Because she, the mom showed up at his door with the bundle. So.
Right. And so her mom has not been forthcoming at all. I mean, her
But
mom
then.
literally magically suppressed her,
Yeah.
didn't tell her that she had powers, told her she was having visions and hallucinations and
And
that
that
she was
she had a.
really sick,
Yeah, she had a genome
which is kind of
disease.
fucked up.
It's true. I didn't even think about that she could possibly not be related to her.
We know that she's related to the King of Lumos, because how else would she have had the power passed to her?
Okay, but see, I don't think she is because I read the glossary or whatever, and her powers specifically are healing and the ability to kill, which I believe is
She
Umbros.
doesn't kill anybody.
She kills the wolf.
Oh, I thought she just kind of like light exploded him.
No, I know, which is Phortos, because remember when they cross the border and she like gets the zap?
Oh yeah,
And
so
they're like, when you leave like your place and you come back, like you get like re-energized or whatever, like you feel the thing. And
all right, hold on. Okay, go on, go on. My brain is working and I have
yeah,
something to say.
and her, so Lumos is light and shadow, but her powers are specifically healing because she heals Lillian. And she zaps like and turns the wolf into like a pile of ash. So I think she's descendant of that of Phortos. Because I'm pretty sure that's what their powers are. Because everyone, yeah, because the healers come from Phortos. The descended healers come from Phortos.
Okay, so, but they specifically say that once you leave your realm, your powers don't work anymore. That's why after the fire, they send the burn victims to Fortos, because the healers can't come over because once they cross the border, they don't have powers anymore. So she clearly has powers in Lumos, And she has some kind of light power because remember, like, the light shoots out from her hands when she's healing Lily.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, wow, what was that flash of light? And she's like, I'll fucking know. But they're in Fortos when the wolf attacks them.
Yeah.
After they were banging in the woods. So her powers work in both realms.
And I think there's something to that because when the king, when she's holding, like, the hand of the king and he, like, wakes up or whatever and he's like, I'm not afraid of my death. And then says, daughter of the forgotten. And then when she's in the woods at the very end, like, the voice in her head is, like, chanting, like, daughter of the forgotten, like, killer of realms or something like that. So I imagine she's, like, more demigod, if not,
like... She is somehow the specialist special.
She's a specialist special.
She's the most special.
Yeah.
And I think that the weird prophecy woman in the beginning could be tied to the voice in her head. I think that the prophecy woman is one of the gods, goddesses, whatever. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And that she was just kind of taking some kind of form to, like, I don't know, lead her in a certain way.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing I hated about DM the most is literally everybody fucking around her knows that there's something else to that. You know, at Luther because he can feel her power, but like, and like when she goes into like the houses and like she pretends to be descended and whatever, like, and she even knows, but she's so firmly in like, I'm just immortal. I'm just immortal. I'm like, girl, come on. Like,
right.
Come on.
Get your,
like,
shit together.
You know that like 2 and 2 isn't equaling 17. Like, you know, something over here is wrong. Like, you know that you healed Lily. You know that you killed that wolf. You know you can feel shit, like, and I think that was what was bothering me so much, is she was so, like, no, I'm not, no, I'm not, no, I'm not. I'm like, come on, like, at some point, at least, if you're not going to say it out loud, that's fine, but internally, be like, yeah, I think there's something else going on here.
Right. No, I agree with you. I also think that her father knows what's going on with her, for sure, like, her stepfather. Her stepfather has to know about her magical powers because he's so about the flame root. He gets so mad when he finds the flame root, you know, that she hasn't taken.
Yeah.
So he knows too. So he's keeping shit from her too. And I think he knows where the mother is.
Oh yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he knows because in her little epilogue, she says only 3 people know where she what she's doing, and 2 people know her location. And she said, and one would do like anything in his power to come get her. And I think that's the dad. And I think Luther also knows where she is.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I can already see a third act breakup coming up in the second book or third or however long it takes.
They're not even together.
I know, but
eventually.
When
she's gonna find out that he's been lying to her.
Yeah. Yeah. And he knows. I mean, obviously, like, he knows now. But he knew, I think, before what that she is, whatever it is that she is, because I think that that's what they were talking about when they were in the alley, is there's something about her. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he knows she's got magic because he can feel it, and yeah. He can sense her across, you know, when she arrives and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so at the end, she becomes queen, and I'm wondering how, so Luther hints to, basically, I think that he didn't want to be a ruler, and like,
it was being forced. Yeah, he does say that.
He was being forced into it, so.
Or it's just that everyone expects him as the most powerful descendant, everyone expects that, you know,
yeah,
it'll be passed to him, and he's been kind of groomed his whole life, growing up a prince in the palace, you know, with the king.
Yeah, so I think, like, now she's officially been, and I'm that, okay. So I went back and forth on if I wanted to read the second book, because again, I just cannot stand her character. But the way that this book ended, I feel like I need to read the second one, because I'm just so interested in how that's gonna happen. Because now she can't deny what she is, because she's now the queen. And so I'm wondering if she's going to fully commit and go to Luther, because she said goodbye to Luther, and that she was, and the last thing was she ran to Henry and was like, let's run away. And Henry's like, no. And so I wonder if she's going to go back to Luther for guidance. I don't think he's going to take it badly. that she's queen, I think.
Not at all. He's fucking head over heels for her.
Yes.
He's going to be thrilled, A, that he doesn't have to be the king.
Yeah.
And B, that the woman that he idolizes is going to be the queen.
Yeah. And, or, do we think she's going to run?
Is she going to refuse the call?
Which I don't know if she can.
It would be in her character, though. It would be in her character to run, certainly. Especially because of, but she's running anyway because she's been kicked out of her home by the father, the stepfather.
Yeah.
He's like, get the fuck out. She's quit her position as healer. She doesn't want to marry Henry. You know, so she was basically going to have to run anyway because what the fuck was she going to do?
Yeah.
You know, she was at a crossroads as it is. So now it's, are you going to run to the city and be the fucking queen or are you going to run into the woods?
Yeah, because the only person that knows is Teller, her brother, because he was there when it happened. So, yeah, I don't. And I was always wondering that because they like talk about like, oh, it passes to whoever is like has the most power. But I'm like, OK, but how? And now it just apparently chooses the person. Like, they don't just be like, I am now the most powerful and I am now king or queen. So she didn't get a say in it. It just happened to her, except for, like, it was, like, her head, and then she was like, yes, like, take me or whatever. So I guess she technically did choose it, but it shows her.
I thought she was
saying,
like, take me and kill me. That's what I thought she was, like, saying, because she felt all this, like, heat and power and, like, pain come in, and I think she was just kind of, like, surrendering to this, like, it's, like, fucking take me out. Like, I am done. Like, yes. She is miserable in that moment, and I don't think she is willingly accepting the power or the crown. I think she's literally like, just fucking put me 6 feet under.
Yeah.
I am done with this earth.
That's what she thought she was saying. But they were like, no, no, no. You're queen.
They're like, just kidding.
So, yeah, I'm curious on if she's going to run or if she's going to, like, go to Luther and be like, yo, like.
I think that she's going to embrace it and that she's going to think that she can do something to change the conditions for the mortals in Mortal City. And improve the relations between the descendant and the mortals.
Yeah, because
that's why she joined the rebels. She wanted to make like a peaceful difference and improve the lives of the mortals. And I think she's going to see this as her chance.
Yeah. And I mean, right now, like, she's kind of pissed. Well, no, because now it was the descendants were pissed at her. Now the guardians are pissed at her. And she's kind of won favor with the descendants because they like took her plans. And then they blew up the armory and she went in and she saved people. And so now, like, she has kind of the appreciation from them. Not that they really give a lot to mortals, but, like, yeah, she went and saved a bunch of descendants. So,
well, because she can recognize the difference between an innocent and not.
Yeah, even though she's,
regardless of their fantasy race.
Yeah, even though she's, like, technically it was my fault. Which, I mean, she stole the plans. She didn't plan the bombing.
If she wasn't so fucking naive, she would have known.
Yeah, what was going to happen.
Also, Luther knows that she's fucking in on it. He straight up asks her, like, are you a guardian? Like, he knows. He knows that she is partially responsible for this.
She
doesn't care. He still loves her.
Yeah. So, there's even a part where she goes to, like, the first meeting or whatever, and she's like, she feels like, she looks back, and she feels like eyes are on her, and I'm sure it was Luther. Because he even makes a comment, he's like, they're not as secretive as they think they are. So, I mean, and he's been in Paradise Row many times, meeting with her mother. So, yeah, I mean, he for sure 100% knows. And she, you know, kind of confirms it when she tells him about the hole in the wall.
Right.
But, yeah, he doesn't care because, are we surprised? We think they're mates.
Yeah, we don't actually know if there's mates in this world, but there's a moment when she's in his bed after the fire and, you know, the cousin is, he's talking to the cousin and the cousin's like, who is this woman to you? And he's like, I think she is my, and then dot, 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 fade
black.
And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
You can feel each other from across the room. You know,
Their powers mingle. Like when she's in,
they have dual visions of each other.
Yeah.
Either from the past, a past life or a future situation.
I think it's future.
I think it is too. Where they can mirror each other's, like,
they're standing on, she has it one time and there was a blurry figure, but she's on a battlefield and there's like bodies all around her and the smell of death and she has this blade and all sorts of stuff and there's a blurry figure in the background, and then she puts her hand over like her heart. And then after she meets Luther, she has it again when they're standing in the burning building, but this time like it's the image is clear and it's him. And then when they come back, when she comes back from like the vision, they're both like having their hand over their heart. And especially when like she's in the building and he puts out his light power, and it like there's very descriptive about how like it flows through her and it like melts with her, and like she gets all of these feelings and can touch it. And I don't think they're supposed to be able to, especially like quote unquote immortal, which is what she thinks she is, but she's not. So yeah, I mean it's hinting to something like that there.
Right, some kind of soul entwining situation.
Yeah, which I think they do have mates, because they say that about like I think the king.
Oh, yeah, that he's not just a king, he's a father and an uncle and a mate. Okay, you're right, you're right. I that was a quick throwaway line there. That was, hey, pen pal.
So they're obviously end game, or at least that's what we're
Well, I
supposed
don't think
to
Henry's fucking endgame.
think. No, I don't think so.
There's a
Especially not
quote,
now.
there's a fucking quote, and I love it, and I think it's excellent advice for anybody. And they're talking about Henry, and I think it's Mora, the healer, that's talking to her, and she goes, "Don't choose a mediocre life with a mediocre man. Go be exceptional. If he's worth it, he won't judge you. And if he's really the one, he'll come along for the ride."
Yeah, and like when Henry proposes to her and she doesn't answer, and then she goes to her stepdad and she's like, "How did you know mom was the one?" And he was like, "The truth is, I just knew." And the only time she thinks about that is when she's kissing Luther, and like in the middle of the kiss, it pops up in her head what
And
her
she's
dad
like,
is,
I
and she's
just
like,
knew.
"The truth is, I just knew." So yeah, I'm pretty sure they're in game.
Yeah. Don't choose a mediocre life with a mediocre man or woman, depending on your preference.
Facts. Okay, anything else?
I got nothing.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Yeah. All right, that is going to be our review of Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole. Thanks for joining us. And again, make sure to like and follow us on all of our major social media platforms at For the Shelf Podcast. And then join us next week for our review of Ice Planet Barbarians by Ruby Dixon. And again, give us some stars wherever you're listening to this podcast, so it will help spread
The
us
joy.
the joy in our reviews to other listeners. I do have one disclaimer before we sign off here. This is obviously going to come out on Tuesday, the 19th, to absolutely nobody's fucking surprise. Florida is supposed to get hit yet again with another hurricane. Next Wednesday, allegedly the 20th, we still don't know exactly what is coming. If anything, there's still plenty of time for it to move, change, die down, whatever. But if it unfortunately does come our way, we will probably not get an episode in, just because Wednesdays are usually when we record.
There and being that Kelsey lives on the college campus, they have to evacuate. Oh, they always evacuate because, you know, it's just safer for the faculty and students.
Faculty and
So
students.
maybe no episode, but maybe we won't have another goddamn hurricane.
Yeah, let's hope that we don't. It's very disruptive.
My God, it sure is.
Yeah, but we
We're
will.
just starting to get all the trees and shit out of
I
the
know
roads, like literally.
they finally picked up from Milton. They finally picked up all the stuff from my yard, except for I have a giant tree trunk that I hope we don't get hit with another hurricane, because I don't know if that would become projectile or not. I
Yeah,
know.
that's fair. They're gonna have to like work really hard to get all the debris off the roads. I mean, they
Yeah.
finally took up the huge pile of trees from the back of the bookshop
Yeah.
last week, but like there's so many areas of town that are still just covered in debris. And boats, there's just like boats on the side of the
Yeah,
road. Yeah, it's just
everywhere.
crazy.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll keep you updated on social media on if we will have an episode or not. Even if it's a small hurricane, we also have to factor in if we get power and internet and things like that. But again, we'll let you guys know. If we are able to record an episode, there might be a toddler in the background. Who knows? But anyways, again, thank you so much for joining us for our review of Spark of the Everflame.
Bye, book besties.